You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD-1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Mariah Petway, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, rugby in retrospective, men's 2023-2024 season, Wonder Wardrobe, 2000s tween fashion, and how olive oil got her groove back. These stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Rugby, a sport that has been growing in popularity throughout the world, has a history here at Northwestern. Ella Smith looks back on a great year for the club, sport, and their future.
Northwestern's men's rugby holds the title as the oldest club sport at the university. Founded in 1972, the team and its members have had its ups and downs, most recently COVID-19, when the club was close to being shut down. But this year, men's rugby has experienced a revitalizing season, going to nationals last week, placing third, and becoming the number 12 team in the nation. On the last day of practice this year, several members of the team reflected on the triumphant season and where they see themselves going in the future. Jabali Zoya, a sophomore in CESPE, attributes the success of the 2023-24 season to an array of changes made during the year.
We got new coaches, you know, we shaped up, we started recruiting like some great guys, you know, for the team. We switched up some of our play styles and it's really shown on the playing field.
Olatunji Osho-Williams, a junior in Medill, is also a returning player. While he wasn't on the team during the COVID pandemic, he notices the radical changes that occurred in the past few years.
The club during COVID was almost died. We wouldn't have had a club today if it weren't for those seniors that stuck around. Going from that to, I would say, last year to now, where we competed in NCR's D2 national championships, it's been incredible. I didn't expect that to happen.
James Hebson, the head coach of the team for several years, is also a Northwestern alumni who played on the team in the 80s. Over the decades, Hebson has seen the culmination of events leading up to where the team is now.
Obviously, we've reached the pinnacle here with getting to the Nationals, but, you know, we've had some real down years. We've been kicked off campus a couple times. COVID really laid us low. We had some successes back when I played in the 80s. So it's kind of remarkable that we've lasted 52 years.
New players, such as Weinberg freshman Sam McLean, offer a different perspective on the team season. As someone with no prior rugby experience, McLean is astonished by the progress that's been made in such a short time.
To go from a team that doesn't even do cuts to make it to nationals is pretty astounding. You know, our program pretty much was almost gone as of just a couple years ago, and suddenly to turn it around and head to nationals, it was really great to be a part of that journey.
Oluwatoni Adisa, a freshman in McCormick, offers similar sentiments. As another person whose first experiences with rugby were on the team, he's impressed by the growth they've made.
If you watch us play, our technical ability and understanding of the game, it's grown tenfold since the start of the year.
Linus Bray, a freshman in Weinberg, is also one of the co-captains. With 3 years ahead of him, he says that this year's season is only the beginning.
We've just gone back from DC, and I would say the thing we realized was if we all buy into it, we can be really, really good. There's no reason that in the next 3 years we can't win nationals. We're kind of at the peak of our powers.
While some players have joined without prior rugby experience, many of them have played other sports in the past, some even citing the similarities to soccer as reasons for why they enjoy the sport. Because of the potential of the sophomore and freshman-heavy team, Hebson agrees with Bray's argument that they can go even further.
We can have like a two-year ramp-up window with the goal of winning nationals, maybe even three with some of the freshmen.
After returning from nationals, Osho Williams believes that the team has the motivation needed to become even better.
Going to nationals and seeing a different level of competition, competing with teams that were consistently competing with D1 teams, premier teams, and just being around that, I think for me personally, it's made me want to get really, really good.
Nationals hasn't just made the team more confident and competitive, it's also made them closer. The close contact of the sport and the reliance on others forms trust on and off the field.
as we've been playing and playing, we've gotten closer and closer as guys. It's kind of a tough thing to do, to go and put your body on the line for 80 minutes.
There's a lot of that like brotherhood bond, just because it's a game where you're so reliant on each other. I mean, I guess that's kind of a lot of sports, but this one, you know, you're putting your body on the line for the other players on the field.
It's like a whole different sense of social interaction, because literally in rugby, I'm being grabbed by my butt and lifted into the air. I'm like tackling these people. I'm getting tackled by them. There's a level of comfortability.
To Hebson, the sense of community goes past the current team roster. The club has a strong alumni network, and the sport connects people globally.
When a player starts, I always tell the guys, you've just joined an international fraternity.
For WNUR News, I'm Ella Smith.
Wonder why your favorite Disney Channel stars' outfits looked a little crazy? Dive into the vibrant world of 2000s Disney fashion, where colorful outfits weren't just style choices, but a part of a carefully crafted formula. Kara Totley has more.
The 2000s tweens fashion was marked with an abundance of color, mismatched print, fur, sequins, and lots of layering. Even though some outfits may have been better than others, there was one particular studio that was pumping out some of the most iconic 2000s looks. That studio is none other than Disney. In the 2000s and early 10s, Disney had a variety of shows that gave us fashion icons like Hannah Montana, Lizzie McGuire, Raven Baxter, and London Dipton. Sometimes the fashion choices worked, and sometimes it didn't.
I've definitely, you know, seen like clips from Shake It Up where I kind of cringe a bit. But I also give myself praise because, you know, it was the trends of the time.
That was Jessica Raplansky. Raplansky was the costume designer for multiple Disney Channel shows, including Shake It Up and Austin and Ally.
The aesthetic I kind of developed on that show was very, like, layered, which I thought was very interesting. But so we were layering a lot of different clothes. Like, so even if, like, one of the actors was wearing a crop top, they would have, like, another top, like a tank top underneath, but we made it in a way that looks like cool and part of the style.
This aesthetic is so identifiable that people are now poking fun at the style on TikTok. Katherine Wagner, a former costume designer for Disney who worked on some of their more popular shows, told Vogue about the importance of color in a show's wardrobe. At the time, live-action shows were essentially competing with cartoons for the attention of children. Hence, Wagner chose to utilize brighter colors when styling Disney actors. But in a way, it worked. Disney Channel was at its peak popularity between 2010 and 2015, with shows like Wizards of Waverly Place, Jonas, Shake It Up, Hannah Montana, and many more. According to Statista, the channel averaged about 1.96 million viewers in 2014. Thus, the clothes became a part of a formula in crafting a Disney show.
Disney was very, you know, they had very strict rules about what was appropriate to show for girls, or, I mean, kids in general, but I feel like specifically girls. And so, yes, we definitely had to be very mindful of, like, not showing too much midriff, making sure the skirts weren't too short, heels and all that.
Which in hindsight makes sense. The bright and fun clothes matched the mindset of a tween picking out an outfit during that time. It was also an age-appropriate version of the trends happening in the women's fashion scene, such as the miniskirt, which explains the love for the jeans or the leggings under the skirts. Adding a bit of modesty to protect the young actors who at the time were working at ages ranging from 12 to 14. However, sticking to this formula doesn't allow for the actors' clothing to mature with them. Thus, at the age of 18, actors had to adhere to the same modesty standards that they had as a tween, especially since the outfit standards weren't constricted to their on-screen characters, but also to the actors' personal lives, highlighting another aspect that contributed to the standards of Disney: purity culture.
By the 1990s, there is a large-scale cultural fear around sex, and it was a couple of things. One, you have the HIV/AIDS crisis. The other thing that was perceived as a problem in the 80s and 90s was teen pregnancy. And so both of those things together created a real fear.
That was Dr. Sarah Mosliner, faculty at Central Michigan University in the Department of Philosophy, Anthropology, and Religion. Dr. Mosliner has been studying evangelic purity culture for almost 15 years.
The SBC started to threaten to boycott both Disney and ABC. They had millions of people who just, you know, stopped going to Disney and were like committed to boycotting because it was this family values issue. And especially Disney, which is supposed to be this family friendly place, right? They were changing the definition of family that the SBC was and other evangelical Christians and other conservative Christians were not willing to accept.
The SBC stands for the Southern Baptist Convention, and at the time, they were gaining more power as Disney started to lose money. So Disney began to buckle.
Disney, you know, shifted, was very much influenced by the SBC and purity culture, and under pressure, embraced this as a way to market their young stars.
One of those marketing strategies was purity rings. Almost every Disney actor in the 2000s wore purity rings, and Disney was able to use their stars proclaiming their chastity as a way to create a new wave of profitable teen stars. Joe Jonas told James Corden during Carpool Karaoke,
"The next thing you know is the Jonas Brothers and their purity rings." And that was like what people ran with forever. That was a running joke. And we found the humor in it sometimes, but of course we just kind of decided at one point, we're like, look, this is not who we are.
Purity rings became a part of the Jonas Brothers' identity. Nick Jonas shed more light on his feelings about the way the media discussed the rings in an interview with Harper's Bazaar, saying, quote, "The question should have been, is it appropriate for people to talk about a 16-year-old's sex life? It's absolutely not, and it wouldn't necessarily fly today," end quote. Going back to fashion, Disney's commitment to a vivid and playful wardrobe wasn't merely a strategic move to capture the audience's attention. It was intricately woven into the fabric of modesty standards. They incorporated layers and vibrant colors into the prevailing fashion of the time, as the primary trends of the 2000s were deemed too scandalous to align with Disney's family-friendly image.
Raplansky suggests a more individualistic approach to style, emphasizing the importance of personal comfort and aesthetic appeal.
A person sticks to their, like, what works for them and their body and, like, what they are just drawn to aesthetically, then their style will be good.
For WNUR News, I'm Cara Totley.
TikTok's latest food obsession is, are we reading this right? Olive oil. But there might be some good reason why this pantry staple is getting a new moment in the sun. Allison Rauch has more.
It's spicy and herby. It's fruity and mellow. It's extra virgin. Of course, we're talking about olive oil. As strange as it sounds, it kind of feels like olive oil is having a moment right now. But then again, olive oil has nothing new. It's been used for centuries by multiple cultures for everything from religious rituals to skincare and, of course, cooking. So what's up with the current buzz?
I think one of the biggest things with social media and just like the availability of information in general via TikTok and like just, I mean, search engines are transparency about your food.
That's Talia Jacoby, community manager at Graza, a New York City-based olive oil company. Graza is a young brand, but they've exploded onto the olive oil scene thanks to their unique product design.
It started 2 years ago. Our founders, Andrew and Alan, so Andrew was in Spain during COVID with his wife's family. It really just started with Andrew's like obsession and passion with olive oil and wanting to make a great product available in an easy to use bottle at a mid-range price. And I think that's really what's connected with people is they understand. I feel like our passion translates to our Grazoid's passion.
It also helps that Graza's fun packaging makes it stand out on the shelf. The visuals and the social media effect are definitely part of the brand's appeal. And Jacoby says that the current pop culture climate seems to be very favorable towards olive oil.
I think it's just like fun to use. And you kind of do feel like a little chef, like I think with the whole focus in even in pop culture with like the bear going viral and all these celebrities and people that we look up to maybe for other things, but they're also caring about their foods. And a lot of them are using Graza as well. So I think that's how we've really kind of grown in with these trends. And then, of course, with Dua Lipa saying on the podcast that she likes vanilla ice cream with olive oil and sea salt, it just honestly was like this gift that kind of fell into Graza's lap. Because if you look on our Drizzle bottle, we have ice cream as one of the use cases. And that's been since the beginning, so over 2 years ago.
The celebrity endorsement is always a strong driver of the trend cycle. Remember Gigi Hadid pasta? Even though Graza may have been putting olive oil on ice cream for years, I was skeptical. But I gathered the necessities,
Okay, we have Signature Select brand extra virgin olive oil and Talenti gelato in Madagascar vanilla bean. And we have the Malden sea salt flakes.
Plus a co-taster, ice cream enthusiast Nate Jerram.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
And gave it a try.
Okay. Time to take a bite. Oh. Wait. That was kind of nice, yeah. I low-key thought everyone was lying. That's actually kind of nice.
It just kind of tastes like the ice cream.
Really? Well, you didn't put enough olive oil. It's like, there's the flavor's definitely there. It's a really, like, nice... I don't know how to describe what kind of flavor that is, but it feels very, like... Because you taste kind of the herbiness of the olive oil, and it goes really well with the salt, and it makes it kind of, like... Kind of like salted caramel, but, like, not, you know?
I guess I get that. I kind of just prefer salted caramel.
You don't think the olive oil adds anything?
I've had plenty of olive oil. I'm kind of like scraping it around on the olive oil. Not doing much for me.
Really?
I'd say I'm neutral on it.
What would you rate it out of 10?
4.5. 5.
Wow.
But average. That's what 5 is. It's average. Everybody thinks 5 is bad. 5 isn't bad. Rotten Tomatoes has conditioned you to think that everything needs to be a 7 or it's bad. 5 is average.
I think this was a 7 for me. I think it was pretty good. I think it was pretty good. I probably won't like do it casually, but I understand the hype, I guess.
Believe it or not, this isn't even the only olive oil trend going on right now. Last February, Starbucks rolled out their Oleato line of drinks across their Italian locations. Each beverage boasts about a spoonful of extra virgin olive oil. As of the end of January, they're now available across all U.S. locations.
I just went to Sherbucks and got the Golden Foam Shaken Blonde Espresso, the Oleato line of the Starbucks. There's a bunch of the Oleato drinks, but I read some articles and people said that this one was the best one. All right. Let's do this. Let me put the lid back on. I think I'm just the right kind of person for this kind of thing because I love like a salted caramel. I love a more rounded flavor. I do really like olive oil. I cook with it a lot. Yeah, I mean like, yeah, this is really good. I don't know.
TikTok trends aside, there's also been new interest in health and wellness since the COVID-19 pandemic.
I think the demand for olive oil has increased worldwide because of all the reasons we've been discussing, mostly because of the health benefits of it.
That's Al Corshane, also known as Farmer Al. He has a farm called Frog Hollow in Brentwood, California. Corshane said that their olive oil is special for its purity.
Yeah, it's got a sharper, more pungent, stronger flavor, which is just, it's a matter of taste, right? A lot of people are put off by it because they're so used to oil, which is bland and, you know, softer in the way it lands up, the way it makes your tongue feel. It's a lot, you know, it's easier to understand. But when you get into the Tuscan blend, it does have that bite to it, that pungency, that bitterness. And it's once you acquire a taste for it, it's hard to go back to the bland olive oil, which is what you find on the shelves of most retail stores.
Corshane also noted that a lot of California olive oil producers are known for high-quality products and don't cut their blends with lesser oils. Frog Hollow in particular uses green olives, which produce less juice. Though it's a higher price of production, it produces a more delicate flavor.
It's definitely the way to go if you can afford it and you're willing to go that extra effort to make it work with your recipes or your food choices.
This increased commitment to quality is a promising turn for the olive oil industry. It seems that maybe there's a lot of stars aligning to make olive oil popular right now, at least in the United States. Now more than ever, there's good product on the market and more interesting brands to choose from. Olive oil is no longer just another item to check off the grocery list. It's something people can actually care about and get interested in. If you don't like it on ice cream, I don't think anyone will blame you. But it seems like the olive oil renaissance is here to stay. For WNUR News, I'm Allison Rauch.
The B-list is back, so strap in. Basil-free, Oh, Basil Free got the hottest stories in pop culture this week to keep you informed.
To the B-List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess and pop culture. This week, the Met Gala, Madonna, The Fall Guy, The Madrid Open, and Tom Brady. Big day for Stan Twitter. The Met Gala is today, bringing together the hottest new fashions, the biggest celebrities, and a whole week's worth of repostable Instagram content. Famously dubbed as, quote, fashion's biggest night, the dress code of this year's ball is the Garden of Time, meaning we may expectedly see many florals and botanicals hitting the cream carpet. In music, pop goddess Madonna capped off her 81-date celebration tour with a massive free concert on Rio de Janeiro's Copacabana Beach last Saturday to an estimated audience of 1.6 million people. Performing some of her greatest hits, including Like a Virgin, Vogue, and Like a Prayer, the quote, historic show served as a monumental celebration for the legend's 40 years in music. In movies, the Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt co-starring action comedy flick The Fall Guy was released to positive reviews this past Friday, with critics calling it the, quote, rare mainstream movie with something to entertain everyone. The film, loosely based on the 80s television series of the same name, follows a stuntman as he works on his ex-girlfriend's directorial debut, only to find himself embroiled in a dangerous conspiracy. In sports, tennis's Madrid Open concluded yesterday, with Russia's Andrei Rublev claiming the title after fighting a fever and illness throughout the tournament. Rublev defeated Canada's Felix Auger-Aliassime in three sets, rallying from a 6-4 loss in the first set to win. For the women, Poland's four-time Grand Slam champion Iga Świątek took the trophy after saving three match points against Belarus's Arina Sabalenka. Though the matchup was close, Świątek reigned supreme, positioning herself comfortably as the number one ranked player on the tour. Lastly, the roast of Tom Brady aired on Netflix last night, featuring a star-studded lineup of career comedians, A-list celebrities, and the roastee's former NFL teammates, all there to tear the seven-time Super Bowl champion apart in every which way. Certainly, they didn't hold back, talking about everything from his divorce from longtime wife Gisele Bündchen to his role in the Deflategate controversy. That's all for the B-List this week. Check in next Monday to hear about what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Basil Free.
Now, for a brief look at the forecast. Tomorrow is looking rainy, but warm, with a high of 73 degrees and a low of 56. Despite the torrential rain we had this weekend, the sun seems like it's here to stay. Wednesday is looking like the best day of the week, with a high of 74 and no rain. Thursday will be a little rainy with a 44% chance, and Friday will be dry and a little cooler with a high of 60 degrees. Saturday might be the worst day of the week, with a 50% chance of rain and a high of 60. But don't worry, Sunday is sunny with a high of 68 degrees. So go out and try and enjoy some of those sunny days this week. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. University President Michael Schill will testify before Congress at a May 23rd hearing. The House Committee on Education and Workforce announced Monday. The committee hearing, titled Calling for Accountability, Stopping Anti-Semitic College Chaos, will feature testimony from Schill, as well as presidents of Rutgers University and the University of California, Los Angeles. On Monday, a vote will take place that will determine whether or not video gaming machines, which Evanston now calls, quote, the crack cocaine of gambling, should be brought to Evanston. Millions of birds crossed Illinois last night for their annual spring migration. The migration began Saturday night and continued into this morning. An estimated 313 million birds have crossed over Illinois, heading north to Wisconsin and into Canada. One dead after falling off stage at the Ohio State University graduation yesterday. Police were called and no additional information was provided. The ceremony continued. Turkey officially inaugurated another former Byzantine church as a mosque on Monday. This decision comes 4 years after his government initially declared it a Muslim place of worship, despite objections from neighboring Greece. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X, WNUR News, and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR news stories on our website, WNUR.news, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our producer today is Gabby Shell, and our reporters are Ella Smith, Kara Totley, Allison Roth, and Basil Free. I'm Mariah Petway. Catch our next newscast Wednesday, May 8th. Now back to scheduled programming.